Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me for today's episode is Juliana. Say hello.
Hi everyone.
We are sitting on our couch having just finished watching the movie written and directed by Alex Garland called Annihilation, based on the book by Jeff Vandermeer called Annihilation, the first book in the Area X trilogy, which you read a few years ago, I guess.
Yes. I didn't even look up when I read it.
Yeah, but a while ago.
Yeah, it's a while ago.
A few years ago.
Southern Reach trilogy.
Yeah, and you read the whole thing.
I read the whole thing.
Yeah.
I got it from the library and they had...
There's an e-book, yeah.
Oh, they had all three books.
Yeah, so it's good. I listened to the first audiobook of the first book and then when the second two books came out, I got through them pretty quickly as an audiobook, but there's quite a delay. But yeah, and then a few weeks ago, in preparation for a podcast for the science fiction... No, SFF audio podcast, they're like, hey, we're going to watch the movie and when it comes out in the cinema, read the book. And compare the two on the podcast, like we did for the Altered Carbon, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did it come out in
cinema in the US?
It did have a US release. It had a Chinese release, but it didn't have an international release. It came out on Netflix, so we just got around to watching it. We have just finished it.
Yes,
so.
We just finished it. And I wanted to do the podcast because I wanted to talk about it.
And I wasn't sure I wanted to do the podcast because... It's one of those times when you... Like, I literally read the book, like, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. Ready to do the podcast last week, but we didn't have time.
Yes.
So it's very fresh in my mind. It's not very fresh in your mind, though,
it's,
is it?
In fragments.
Fragments.
Also, it's kind of like... it's like a mash of what is... Like, there is not a real, like, okay, this was book one, this was book two, this was book three. It's like all like, oh, I know the story and this and this and this happens, but I don't know when happened what.
Yeah, so... But it's very fresh in my mind. And then this movie, we watched this movie, and I really enjoyed that movie. I thought it was very good. A few little bits and pieces where I'd be like, eh. But, you know, overall, very interesting, very well made. I really enjoyed it. I'd definitely suggest people make it. But it is so different from the book that the whole idea of doing a book versus movie podcast, like talking about it and like discussing what the differences are and how it is, I don't think there's much for me to talk about because it's just so different. It's like so different. I mean, it has the same name, but the names mean different things in each book. Like, everything about it is different. Like, the characters are different, the backstory is different, everything is about it. The story is different. The only thing that seems to be having common is that something weird is going on, and people, a group of, you know, four or five scientist women go into a zone, kind of, to see what's going on, and weird stuff happens to them, and they might not all make it out alive, you know.
I didn't think the story was too different. I mean,
the elements in
the story were different, but the overall, I totally recognized it.
Yeah, I know. But what I just said is about as close to the book as it comes. Like, you have, in the book, there's four characters, in the movie, there's five characters. But they go into the zone, you know, they lose a bit of memory, whatever, and things like that. And strange things happen to them. And there's a lighthouse. And, you know, there's some swamps, but, like, it's just that broad strokes. It has as much in common to the book as any, say, like, if you're to go, right, okay, a science fiction thing, there's an alien invasion, and people fly some spaceships around, and they defeat the aliens, and the humans are victorious at the end. You're like, okay, which one of, like, 20 science fiction stories is that, and which one of, like, 50 science fiction movies could that be? You know, like, of course this is based on the book, but just what I'm saying is, like, there's so much difference that, like, you can know. I literally read the book going into this and watching the movie. I was like, there is no point in me trying to, like, remember what happens from the book or which characters do what or which characters have certain personalities or who's going to be doing what or what the outcome's going to be. Because it starts with a flashback. Like, it starts with the end of the story in the movie, this is, and it flashes back to earlier. And in the book, it doesn't do that way. It's like journal entries. It's sort of like, I'm writing this now and this happened to me. And it's kind of like catching up with the story as it goes along. And at the end of the story, you realize, oh, this is all written in the first person. And this is when she wrote it, you know, like that kind of thing. And in the movie, it's sort of like, oh, she's retelling this story. And this is when she's telling it.
Yeah.
But those two things are completely different. And you found them out with the movie right at the very beginning, you know.
Yes. Also, there are like three levels of flashback kind of things, right?
Yeah, well, in the book that happens as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, I did... So from my fragment, book memory, it seemed quite, I mean, it was different in lots of ways, but also I recognized a lot of things. So for me, it was,
yes,
there were lots of stuff missed out. There was stuff put additionally.
Yeah, I'm just saying from a story point of view, a thematic point of view, yes, a tonal point of view, like some similarities, but not enough for me to even predict what was going to happen at the end of this. And I must say, I never guessed what was going to happen. And now I realize the different meaning of annihilation that they're talking about in this compared to the title of the book. The title of the book, it's kind of like, it was a trigger word for a hypnosis routine.
Yeah, yeah,
the idea is like, okay, I'm going to I've hypnotized you, and if I say annihilation, I'm going to kill you. I mean, that's a minor spoiler for the book, but that's where it comes from. And in this, it's sort of like the psychologist is a complete different character who doesn't hypnotize them to get them into the zone,
no,
you know, who doesn't try and suggest things to them. All of that's missed out. Like, the way that sort of like in the book, like one of the characters just disappears and you're like, oh, is that going to be explained? It's like, no, like where the characters go, how big the zone is, what created it. All of these different things which aren't explained in the book are explained in the movie, but not in a way which makes me think, oh yeah, that's how I imagined it to be in the book.
No,
like,
totally not.
If I was going to make a movie and was going to, someone was like, yeah, but what is the tunnel, or what is the tower, or what is the lighthouse?
Yeah, it is certainly more of a based on kind of movie.
Yes.
It's not like, okay, we take the book, we make a movie off the book. That's certainly not it. It contains themes, though, that I also kind of had in my mind a little bit with the annihilation, like, you know, with the more scientific.
Yeah, like the biological explanations and things like that.
Yeah, also like the physics and annihilation comes across in all these fields that these women actually work in. Right?
Yes.
So it's a it does have a different view on it, maybe. I'm having very mixed feelings about the movie.
All right, let's get
you
into the
movie. You enjoyed it very much.
Again, it's one of those things that, like, if someone said to me, Luke, make a movie of the book, Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy, you know, episode one, book one, you know, movie one, like, what would you do with it? And in my head, like, the movie that I would make is so different from that. But what Alex Garland has done is make a movie which appeals to me greatly. Like, in a way, I almost wish I'd have watched that movie without reading the book, because it's such a fresh take on what science fiction can be and what, like, weird horror science fiction can be. Part of it's in the book, but the horror in the book is this dawning realization of what's happening.
It's more psychological.
It's much more psychological.
Warfare kind of thing, stuff.
The whole point of in the book, and again, I don't want to give anything away here, is that when you arrive there, everything looks normal, but then it turns out things aren't normal. I don't want to go into why it isn't normal, but the horror is like working out that while everything does look normal, what is changing and what things are is actually the horrific part of it, you know,
yeah,
and how that's tied in with, you know, all the different people who've been there and stuff like that.
It's certainly not that visual.
No, it's not visual at all. I mean, there are a few moments and there's some like dolphins, which you're like, what, something weird about the dolphins, but it's kind of off in the distance, and there's a pig and you're like, is something weird about the pig? You're not really sure. And in this movie, it's sort of like in your face, like, you know, this biology is weird and these animals are weird and this thing is weird and this is mutated, and it's right up front. Like, as soon as they get in, they're like, wow, there's lots of weird stuff there. And then, you know, when weird stuff happens to people, they're like, this is weird. And in the book, it's a lot less, you know,
it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah, it's so much more subtle. So if I had made the movie, it wouldn't have been a science fiction let me just put it this way, like a special effects spectacular kind of thing, like this movie is.
Yeah.
It would have been so much more subtle, like, I don't know, but that's it. But if you are going to have a science fiction special effects spectacular, that this movie does become, and I wasn't expecting that at all. I was expecting something very low budget, because it's like a Netflix movie. His previous movie was Ex Machina, and that was sort of like a budget of like $8 million or whatever
it was.
That
was also a Netflix one, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. We got that as a
at the beginning,
Blu-ray, I think.
You were saying, I wanted to talk about the Netflix thing. So in the US and in other countries, it was in the cinema.
It was only in the cinema in the United States and in China,
okay,
where Paramount released it.
Oh,
and
right.
then it became a Netflix original movie for the rest of the world. Right. So that's why I couldn't watch it three weeks ago.
When the guys were doing the episode for audio.
Maybe not just the United States, but like North America, because I guess Jesse watched it and he's in Canada.
Yes.
So it was released there. But what happened is that Paramount has looked at some of these movies. I read a little bit about it. What's happened, there was some producer there, like the top of the studio has been replaced. So all of the movies that this previous producer was like, yes, let's get behind this, and yes, let's get behind that, and let's get behind this. They're looking at that and going, this cost $100 million to make. If we put it out into the cinemas, it probably won't make very much money back, and we're probably only going to make $30 million. And that means that's a lot of, like, it's a big write down, big write down. And they go to Netflix and show the Netflix the movie, and like, how much will you give us for this? And Netflix will we'll give you $50 million for this. And they're like, great, we're already losing money from this. We're probably already going to lose money for this, so let's go for it. And they did that with the Cloverfield Paradox, which I watched, and it's awful. But I think that was another Paramount movie where they looked at it and went like, yeah, this science fiction movie, it cost us quite a bit of money, and it's not very good, and they put it out. And this one, I think they're just like, and watching at the end of this, I'm like, yeah, like if they watch this is not going to be a commercial success.
Mainstream cinema,
but it seems like it could be. I mean, there's like, you know, Natalie Portman's in it, and
Poe Dameron,
yeah, like
Oscar Isaac,
and all the, I mean, like, there's some big stars in it, and what's her name, Tessa Johnson or something, you know, Tessa Thompson, she's just been in Thor Ragnarok, she's Valkyrie there as well. What's her name, was it Robin Wright Penn? Is that her name now? I can't remember the names. I actually have the Wikipedia page open here, so I should just scroll down. No, Jennifer Jason Leigh. I always get Robin Wright. Anyway, the other one. Oscar Isaac.
Tessa Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, Tessa good. Thompson. There's some like interesting Benedict Wong there as Lomax. I know it's funny. He has a name. He doesn't even have a name in the movie, I don't think. But yeah, they're in there. And you'd think that Natalie Portman, you know, she was in Black Swan. She can carry a movie. She can carry, like, she's won Oscars and things
that. Yeah, sure. But I don't know. But I personally think if that movie would have been in the cinemas in Germany, I totally see that it wouldn't have been, like, a big hit.
No, it wouldn't have been a big hit. And I think that's what Paramount was looking at.
I think they made a good decision of putting it on Netflix, because that way you could just reach loads more people.
Yeah. But like I say, I reckon this is a movie which, I mean, I just saw here on the Google search for it. It says here, IMDb 7.4 out of 10. That's pretty good. Rotten Tomatoes 87%. Metacritic at 79%. That's pretty good. You know, I think that's well received. Okay, but let's go back to your reservations about this movie.
So you
talk for a while.
Okay. First, the beginning certainly. I was like, kind of like, okay, I'll go along with it and stuff. And I really appreciated the almost like 80% female cast. That was amazing. But they took from the book, right?
Yes.
Because that wasn't the book, the same thing. I also really liked that they didn't put, because you know, when women go on a field trip, they put makeup on, of course, right?
Yeah.
So in this one, there was hardly any makeup.
Well, I think the point was, like, they're going into the wild beyond, and it's one of those movies where, like, they start off at the start, you know, and you know, when they're sitting around the table, they're like, la, 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 and they're all having fun. And then as it goes in, they just look more and more dirty, like, and more and more gaunt, and really more and more not, broken,
like,
people.
Really not good looking at all, which I really like, because why always just show men in, like, that look? Not female.
What do you mean not good looking? Natalie Portman's beautiful.
Yeah,
she's
amazing. She looks like wrecked in that. Dark eyes, like bruises all over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she looks like a person in a really dangerous situation fighting a way through a jungle.
Yeah.
This is how she looks like.
Anyway.
And, you know, in other movies that would still, like, she would still, like, have some sort of, you know, I don't know. It's just something that I saw, and I really enjoyed that.
I think the real sex object in this movie is what was his name? The David Gyasi.
Her colleague.
Yeah, her colleague.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's like the
I know, I've seen him in Cloud Atlas. You know, I've seen him in lots of movies and stuff. But
anyway,
you know,
this movie totally passes the Bechdel test.
Yes.
By a long way. So that I really enjoyed. I think though, this movie is kind of like in it's three different categories. It's three different genres.
Yeah, and this is what makes it so difficult. It's like one of his previous movies. What is it called?
Sunrise.
No, it's not called that. This is so weird now, because now I'm going to actually have to click on Alex Geller's name just to remember what he made. Sunshine. So Sunshine is a movie which, again, spoilers for a 15-year-old movie, a 10-year-old movie now, it starts off as a science fiction thing. You're like, oh, space adventure. And it ends up like as a slasher horror psychological drama that ends with them literally falling into the sun and one of the main characters reaching out and touching the surface of the sun and then exploding and saving the Earth. You're just like, wow. Like, at the beginning of this movie, you don't expect that to be the end. So anyone who's expecting a science fiction, you know, spaceship adventure, you're like, yeah. And then, but the people who wanted a weird psychological slasher movie, weird stuff, like, you know, who is it gonna please?
Yeah. So there was science fiction, there was
fantasy.
Whoa, was there some slasher horror thing going on?
It's pretty
gruesome.
And
then I ended actually the movie with when the end credits started. I said, "Look, can I say one word?" I said. Can I say that?
Yeah, yeah.
I said Tarkovsky because the third part of the movie is just like a Solaris, Tarkovsky, even down to the music, you know?
Yes, it did feel like that.
Very, like, whoa.
But Solaris is very much in Sunshine. You know, like, it, again, this same movie maker, he wrote that movie and you can see it in there.
Has an idol in Tarkovsky.
Well, not just that, you know, but like, I know. It's one. Alex Garland is one of those movie makers and writers that if you say, look, if you aspire to be a movie maker, why would you ever aspire to be a movie maker who considers their art to be less important than Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Yeah, I get it. But I must say, Ex Machina, I really enjoyed that.
That's kind of horrific in places as well.
It is horrific, but it stays within one kind of taste.
Yes.
And here, it is like biting into an apple and then having rotten and sour and
chocolate come out as well.
All at the same time.
Yes.
It's just very mixed feelings. And
I love that about this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, carry on. But you didn't like it.
Well, I can't really say I didn't like it. There were bits that I really liked. I thought some of the set design was really good. And I sometimes thought, okay, I think I see this is actually like really made.
Yeah, someone made that thing.
Somebody made actually physically that like sculpture kind of thing. On the other hand, then there was
some of the compositing was a bit, you'd be like, oh, that's a little bit rough.
That was a bit like, oh,
the
am
thing
I going
is,
back to 10 years?
I can look past that.
Yes, I know. But
In a way, there are so many movies which are much better. Well, I wouldn't say movies that are much better than this. I'm saying there's so many movies where I'll forgive some, you know, wobbliness in some CGI effects or some compositing or whatever like that. Just because, like, the story is bringing me along. The characters are bringing me along. Like, the movie was working for me so much that even when I saw a little bit of the joins in the special effects, I just went with it. I was fine with it. You know, I guess the movie was kind of putting you off in much that when you got to some of the a little bit dodgy special effects, you were like, oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was some, as I said before, some of it, I don't even know if it was set design or if it was CGI. But there were some scenes where I literally sat there and thought, like, really, this is what we like. I mean, it just didn't fit. It didn't need to be there that way. They had so many beautiful things to express this whole thing, and then suddenly we see these crystal trees.
Yeah,
really.
I could have gone without those. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I understand. Again, I understand what he was doing with them, you know, and I understand what was going on. But when we got to the crystal trees at the end, I was like going, like, isn't the lighthouse a big enough thing? Like,
yeah,
couldn't that...
exactly.
Like,
wasn't that enough?
It wasn't enough.
And this
enough.
Is kind of like how I feel about the movie.
Yeah.
Wasn't it enough to stay within one stream, one...
No. I don't think so. I don't think so. Because this is why Alex Garland is a movie maker who is very divisive and makes studios freak out and say, change the end of the movie, and he goes, no. And they're like, oh, shit. And then, you know, his movie gets... So the reason he's like that is because he's, like, he will take these risks. He will take these challenges on. and go for it and make a movie like that. And it's one of those things where it's really difficult to keep making commercially successful movies.
This just wouldn't be.
If you're like that, if you're and you've just got to keep putting out quality product at such a level that they'll just go, all right, well, your last one was a massive critical success, but it's sort of like, maybe change the ending to be a little bit more like in line with the rest of the movie, or not to be crazy.
Well,
or
this
to
is what I think is really good, that they put it out on Netflix, because this is exactly the platform for this kind of movie.
Yeah.
First of all, I feel very comfortable watching this on my own couch. I really would have not felt comfortable spending 30 euros for the two of us on movie tickets.
Why not? I would have gone to see that movie in the cinema.
No, it just...
But then again, I'm one of the few people who really like both the first half of Sunshine and the second half of Sunshine and the way that they fit together. And I don't know very many people who
have watched this, haven't we?
Maybe.
I think we did watch it. I can very much remember they were then on these solar panels outside.
Well, it wasn't a solar panel. It was a solar shield. And it's amazing. And it's got an amazing soundtrack as well. And the music of this movie. I like the music of both of these movies.
There was one scene where it was silence and there was guitar music.
Yeah.
30 minutes later, we had a similar kind of thing walking through the jungle.
Yeah.
And suddenly we still had background noise and then the guitar music. And it didn't feel... Yeah. It didn't feel consistent enough.
No, I quite liked it because it mixed around. There was a lot of different playfulness at the start. There was this kind of montage, well, this like flashback kind of thing, and there was this some kind of music.
And then
it was soundtrack music, and then it cut out, and it was incidental music, you know. But just like I say, the music. Anyway, what I was saying about Sunshine is there's a music called, I think, Tanaka's Adagio or whatever it is, and it's from one of my favorite scenes in that movie, and like one of my favorite movie moments of all time, and this amazing music, but it's being used in so many different trailers and in other movies. I actually hear it in other movies, and you're just like, that's incredible, but
it doesn't fit with your emotional
Every time I go to the cinema, another movie is using this same music, and I downloaded the soundtrack I bought the soundtrack.
It always triggers the same emotional response,
but the music is so good in Sunshine that no matter how many other movies have borrowed this for their trailers, it still takes me back. That music still takes me back to that original watching experience that I had, and was just literally like watching the screen with my jaw open and my ears being blown off, just going, oh fuck, this is amazing cinema. And there isn't many moments in cinema that do that. And of course, I don't think anything in this movie did that.
I think Arrival did like similar.
Arrival, like, it had similar
the
ideas with the
very,
music. Yeah.
Very, very special.
Yeah.
In this one, again, the same way, the way that the cinematography is split up in three different movies, kind of.
It did feel like three different musical directors.
Yes, it did feel like that. Yeah. And in the beginning, I didn't notice the music, which I always consider good. And towards the end, I was so...
I know, I saw you reacting to the music. It is over the top, but... If you're gonna do the end of 2001: A Space Odyssey, or you're gonna do something like that, and you get like 2001: A Space Odyssey shows the next step in human evolution.
Yeah,
in a physical and musical way, and it's like that's really difficult to do.
It is like often you have videos and especially on YouTube when you have a video where somebody does something or something happens and they put this dramatic music on, where I always think like, oh come on guys, really? I mean,
you think Annihilation did that?
I think
the use of the music became the language.
I understand what they were going for, but it felt so amateur-like in comparison to then Tarkovsky, you know, in Solaris, with that music and the cinematography was so much more one thing. And there they were just trying something. And to me, it didn't do anything at all.
Okay, here's the way that I look at this. And this is why I like this movie so much. It's aiming, you know, it's like in gymnastic scoring. You can pull off an easy move and you're like, oh, you get a 5. Or you can like mess up the land or mess up like the launch or something. But if you get like most of the way around in the triple tuck to the second bounce to the quadruple forward flip. And if you land, you could land and then take a bit of a misstep at the end. And you're just like, well, you got most of the way there and it was way, way harder. So grading for difficulty on this movie... especially based on a book like Annihilation.
To make a movie out of that, you must be a little bit crazy, I think.
To just even attempt it. So, like, grading on a difficulty curve, this movie is really, really good. Even if, along the way, I do see a few missteps and a few things, I'd be like, ah, are we really going to go with that? And again, some of the music choices are that. Although I did enjoy, you know, I did enjoy most of the music. But there were a few times when I was like, this music's a bit weird. Let me just look across to Juliana to see how she's reacting, looking across and like seeing your face and going, yep, I'm kind of like halfway to that reaction as well. But again, the rest of the movie was, it was like, it's so ambitious and so interesting that it let me go for it. I do want to talk a little bit more about the book, though.
Ah, okay.
Because I really enjoyed the book, and some of the things...
I've already reviewed it
on the podcast, okay. But, you know, so if you want to check out the book, look back through the archive feed. I will quickly look. Let me just... It'll come up here in a second. So, actually, let's just find it. Annihilation. Go check out episode 253, Southern Reach number 1. I gave it 4 stars. On my second reading through, I think I'd even give it a little bit more because it was so nice to come back to that and read some like weird fiction. What I really liked about it is that all of the answers about what was happening was in the book, but like I say, so subtle. This movie is not subtle. This movie begins with an asteroid flying through space, heading down to Earth, and then hitting a lighthouse on the coast of the United States. And I'm like, that... It answers too many questions before the movie even begins. Sort of like, what's happening? Well, it's like, well, something from outer space landed, you know. But the whole idea of an asteroid coming past and affecting the Earth, I was like, isn't that like a Stephen King movie where a comet goes past and the dust comes down and settles and then all the cars and bridges and everything like come to life and start killing people? Yeah. That's literally like one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And that's the same setup for this one. I'm like, and it starts off like that. I'm like, it was so much nicer in the book where it's sort of like, don't really know what's going on in Area X.
Also, to be honest, if anything like that happens, nobody would be able to keep that secret.
Yes.
All over the world, there are telescopes pointing all over nobody detects it.
Yeah. In the book, it's much sort of like you approach the wall and then you have to be hypnotized to get through it, otherwise there's no other way. But you can't really see it and it's not really detectable in any way. And it's really subtle and you're not quite sure when you've passed into Area X or not, except that, you know, electronics stop working and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
And in this book, there's like literally massive military installations around and it's sort of like sonic rumbling and it's like causing earthquakes and it's growing really quickly. It's sort of like in 3 years it's going...
It looks a bit like an oily... film on
which I
water,
like. I like,
which
but...
I already immediately thought, Tarkovsky.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, I like what it is, but it's so different from the book here. It's sort of like, oh, this happened about 3 years ago. In the book, it's sort of like, we're not quite sure when it started because some people were living here and something weird happened and we don't really know when it started. You know, all of the stuff in the book, by the end of the book, the story and what is going on and what the function is and what's going to happen later on, and it actually plays out through the other books, is so well explained, but it's so subtly explained that you've got to kind of piece it together. And I really enjoyed that weirdness, that if you want to make a decision of what the book is about and what it's actually saying, there is a way to agree on that.
There's,
do you know what
more,
I mean?
There's more place for interpretation. In this... There's
no, in fact, what I'm saying is I don't think there's a lot of room for interpretation in the book.
Okay.
Because if we both read it and both thought we understood exactly what was going on and we both shared it, I reckon with a close enough reading, we could both get to the bottom of actually what's happening in the book.
Okay, but does the conclusion all in the first book?
It's all in the... That's what I said.
It's in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. After reading the whole thing and then going back and reading the first book, you're like, oh, actually, a lot of that stuff that was later on is hinted at here quite a lot, if you know what I mean.
Is it like in like most clever books?
Most well-written stories, yeah. It's called foreshadowing. It's all in there. But I'm saying, but the weirdness, it kind of lets you... The weirdness kind of creep up on you. And by the end of the book, she's like, oh, I'm going to go here and do this. And you're like...
It's not a good idea.
No, it's not that it's not a good idea. It's sort of like, oh, yeah, that kind of explains what's gone on, you know. And it kind of wraps everything up. You're like, all right, I do understand. And while you haven't explained it, you haven't said, a comet came back and hit. It's been here exactly 3 years. This is where the wall is. Or this is how it is. All the other people who've gone in here haven't come out. This is the the psychologist's job is this. Like, in the book, none of the characters have names. There's the biologist. There's the psychologist. Yes. There's the meteorologist. Geologist and something else. I can't remember. And there was a fifth one, but the fifth one just doesn't even get through. They're like, oh, there was five of us in the party. Where's she? And it's even said we weren't socializing. We didn't know each other's names, all that kind of stuff. And the beginning of the movie starts off where they're like, hey, let's get the team together. And they all sit around and literally introduce themselves. It's like, I am the biologist. I am the medic.
Paramedic.
I am the, what is it, the geologist. I am the, whatever, you know. Yeah. I am the psychologist. And they, I mean, they give their names, and all the way through they're called the names. So even the idea of sending in a team of people but not letting them know each other because it's too dangerous for them to know each other. Like, not even having names, they only have to have roles and positions, you know. You know, hypnotizing them just to be able to get in there, you know, keeping track of things, not having any advanced technology. You know, in this case, they took radios in, but none of the radio, like in the movie, they took the radios in, but none of them were used beforehand. Whereas in the book, they're like, oh yeah, we do have radios, but they're like from the 1950s before microprocessors.
Or it's like all the analog technology working.
Yeah, it was technology that came from the time before Area X started happening 30 years ago or whenever it was. And also it was known that when people go in, some people do make it out and they're fine, and other people go in and they make it out and they're not fine, and other people go in and they don't make it out. You know, it was much more of like a 50-50 shot if you
and
go
the
in.
Rabbits were way bigger of a thing, right? Here they just said, oh, we send in rabbits.
Oh, did they mention rabbits?
Yes,
oh, I didn't. I do remember that.
It was just a side thing.
Yeah, there's a few things in the movie where, like, the book is like the Southern Reach trilogy. It's like, oh, it's your first time here at the
Southern Reach.
Yeah, first, and then that's it. And and there was sort of like just an Area X, and then that's never mentioned again. You know, another time.
That in my head, that was way bigger of a thing
in the book.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's because you've read the second and third book, and that's much more to do with the Southern Reach. It's all the stuff that happens in the buildings outside, the administration and all that kind of stuff, where you work out that what was inside of Area X might not have been contained as well as they think, which is, I don't know, it's a weird one. Yeah, so that's half an hour on this movie and a bit on the book. But I'm just saying, so much of the good stuff in the book isn't in the movie, but the movie has so much good stuff which isn't in the book. I'm like, it's such a different story. The setup is similar. The tone is similar in some ways, although way more subtle in the books.
Yeah.
The visuals are completely different. The characters are completely different. The backstories are completely different, except sort of like, she has a husband who's gone in and come out, and now she's going in.
Yeah.
And the reason she's going in is to, you know, work out what happened to her husband or something like that, you know. So but even then, how she got the job in the book is completely different from how she got the job in the movie and all the different kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just saying, almost everything about the basic setup is different, and yet they are recognisably the same kind of thing point...
You could definitely say this is a movie based on that book.
However, let's go back to another movie by Alex Garland. No, did he write 28 Days Later? Now, let's go back again here. So, he was a writer, Alex Garland. Did he... Yeah, so he wrote 28 Days Later, which, when we did the podcast about 28 Days Later...
Yeah.
When we did the podcast about the Day of the Triffids, we said that Day of the Triffids has been made into a movie, a very good movie, and that movie is called 28 Days Later, because everything except for plants that eat people that is in the Day of the Triffids, all of that is in 28 Days Later. To the point that if you wrote now, like, set in the modern times, but like a very faithful retelling of Day of the Triffids, people would watch it, and if they didn't know it was a pre-existing story, they'd be like, you know, that's a little bit too similar to 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
Now, I think Annihilation, you could have somebody else, not Alex Garland, but like another movie maker, make a movie version of the book Annihilation. And it would be different enough from this movie that you could watch it and enjoy it as its own thing.
Totally.
Do you understand that?
It's different. There's more stuff in the book that you could play with to make a different movie from the same base.
Yeah.
But still being individually enough separation.
Yeah, it's like some of those Shakespeare plays where you have a modern movie and then you have like a, oh, this is a...
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, well, it's not so much Midsummer Night's Dream. What's that one where, you know, 10 Things I Hate About You based on Taming of the Shrew or whatever. No, which one's Taming of the Shrew? Or is that...
Well, I don't know the English word.
Oh, you don't know the Taming of... Taming of the Shrew...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Am I even saying a Shakespeare play now?
Taming of the Shrew. Yeah, okay. Right.
Adaptations, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
But what I'm trying to say is, like, there are some stories which are can have, like, multiple retellings of them. You know, it's sort of like, oh, brother, where art thou, is the Odyssey. You know, like, that's what...
Oh, okay,
what's
I,
the
I watched it, I totally didn't
you didn't,
get
you
it.
Didn't pick up that. Yeah. But again, like, there are enough different interpretations of the Odyssey that, oh, brother, where art thou, can be a movie version of it. And I think Annihilation... You could do a much more faithful interpretation of it as a movie, where you do keep in place a lot more of what happens in the book and a lot more of the roles and things in the book and a lot more of the subtlety in the book. But then you could take it and it's much more like Stalker or like Roadside Picnic, where it's even more like this movie, but more, unlike Roadside Picnic and Stalker, but even more like accessible, like to actually have it to be just, I mean, when you actually look here on IMDb, it says Annihilation, adventure, drama, fantasy. And I'm like, yeah, but also like weird and slasher and horror and, you know, all those other kind
I
of things.
I really hope this movie is for over 16 or whatever it is.
But I'm saying if you were just like, let's just have it as like a pure... like adventure fantasy story without as much horror and without the weird, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey ending. Like, if you actually like took it in a different direction, it could be a lot more mainstream movie.
Oh yeah, you can make a very mainstream.
Or it
theme.
Could be even more horrific.
Or it
and
could
the ending
even be more Tarkovsky.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there's many different ways that you could take this original story, and I think it's because of the subtlety. And what Alex Garland has done is taken the story in a way which I didn't expect at all, because I don't watch trailers for movies that I think I'm going to see, and I haven't read any reviews about it. All I knew about it, I hadn't even looked at the Wikipedia page, not Wikipedia, even on the Google page to know if it had got good reviews or not on
Metacritic. The only thing I knew, it was coming out, and then I saw the picture on Netflix.
That's what I'd seen.
Basically it, but I didn't even look at the picture really.
Yeah. It, again, that's another thing. In the book, the main character isn't the military person.
Yes.
Another one of the characters is the military person. Whereas she was just badass.
Combining characters.
And this is why I mentioned this before. You know, in all these different things, you have a set of characters. You have to have the badass. You have to have the frail one. You have to have the one who is slightly more alien. You have to have the one that's, you know... And those roles can be swapped around the different characters as needed to make the story play out. Like, which one of them is going to die first? Which one of them is going to get to the end? You know, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it is a tricky one. But yeah. I think there's more movies that could be made from the same stories. And also... If he wants to make a follow-up to this, I can't imagine there would... Look at this. Box office, $20 million. Let me just quickly look on the... what's that? How Annihilation ending too weird. How Mother cost the film an international... Let's just have a quick look at the production development. I was wondering to see if I could see how much it cost, but I can't see...
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Budget, $55 million. In total, box office $26 million. So they're like, yeah, with a worldwide release, let's get $26 million from theaters in the United States, and then get, you know, to make up the budget, we'll get Netflix to give us, give us $20 million for the international and the kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, $55 million for this movie. You can see where they spent the money. I mean, it's all there on the screen.
It's impressive.
And you understand after him making Ex Machina, which like. That I think that cost hardly any money at all, but still got a best special effects Oscar.
It was very well made.
Yeah.
I think.
So let's quickly look at Alex Garland and quickly have a look at his movie Ex Machina, because that got 15, Garland was nominated for Academy Award.
Was the budget?
Yeah. budget of $15 million, and it got an Academy Award nomination for Best Original Screenplay. It won the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects, got Golden Globe Award, BAFTA Award, Empire Award, Saturn Award, BAFTA Award for Best British Film, you know, loads of Hugo Award nomination, loads of nominations, and an Oscar for $15 million. You can totally understand why Paramount were like, hey, let's give you $55 million and you can do what you want with it. And then afterwards they're like, oh shit, that's too much money. Like, if they'd have given him $15 million to make the same film,
yes,
it would have probably got an international release, because it wouldn't have been so risky.
It felt a little bit like that. It felt like a person who had lots of money and then was kind of like thinking, what can I do? Oh, I do this. And
you
then
know what?
And then I do this
I'm
as well.
Totally up for that. If anyone is going to be given a bit too much money to be a little bit too ambitious, Alex Garland, why not?
Like, no, I just don't think it.
Who else? Who else can get too much money?
I just don't think it wasn't kind of like it
wasn't coherent.
It wasn't glued together enough for me to accept that.
I agree with you. Oh, let me put it this way. I agree that you can think that, and I totally see why you think that. But for me, it was overall, it was good enough that it did hang together, and I really did enjoy it. So that's it. I think that's enough.
I think after this review, you definitely should watch it so you have a clue what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, we kept it pretty vague in all these different ways.
Yeah,
but
so
definitely watch
people
it.
People curious.
Maybe I'll put a note at the beginning. It's like, it's on Netflix. Everyone has Netflix these days. Who doesn't have Netflix these days? Just watch it. It's a good, fun movie. And also, read the book. The interesting thing is, I don't think it matters if you read the book first or watch the movie first.
No, not really.
I would say read the book first, because then the movie, when you watch it, you're like, oh, this is really weird. Because I think there's probably a lot of stuff in the movie which would kind of, I wouldn't say poison your mind, but would kind of bias your reading of the book,
yes,
in a certain direction.
I think read it first.
Yeah, so maybe read the book first, then watch the movie, if you can. It's like a short audiobook. It's like a 6-hour audiobook. You can get it through it. It's a short story, a short novel, so you can get through it pretty quickly. Anyway, that's it. We don't rate books when we're talking about them in terms of movies, or we don't rate movies when we're talking about them here, but this is a fun book versus movie episode.
Yeah, I think it was good.
Yeah.
And thanks for doing this so I can actually talk about it. Not I'm.
Yeah, sometimes we do this. Yeah.
Don't talk about it, we do it on the podcast.
And yeah, we're both reading a book at the same time.
And it's like all the time in between, it's like, I want to say this though.
Yeah, the weird thing is that tomorrow we're going to have another conversation three times as long as this one about the same movie.
Obviously.
And we won't have it. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I don't think the SFF audio podcast, which I wasn't recording, I don't think that's out yet. So
we're first.
We were first with the Altered Carbon podcast as well too. So, but I'm now, I didn't listen to that one because I was on that podcast, but the Annihilation podcast, I'll listen to them for them. And of course, now I can go and read more about the movie and other people's reviews and other things like that. I saw some reviews come through on my RSS reader and other places. But yeah, I'm now really interested to see what other people think and see if they think the same as me. And again, I could probably talk about this movie for 3 hours easily, like straight away now, 3 hours, but I don't think I need to.
No, also, it's 11 o'clock at
night. 11 o'clock at night, but that's not the reason why I won't talk about it 3 hours, because I think me talking about the same movie for 3 hours would probably be quite insufferable. but this is one of those movies that I could probably go through. You know, it's one of those film studies things, like, fast forward a movie, press pause, and then talk about what's on the screen.
There's a lot there. It's like if you have a movie for film students.
Yeah.
Like, this is the kind of, we were talking earlier about poetry analysis.
Yeah.
This is like a movie where you could go...
Okay, for example, I noticed when they were sitting down... In a flashback, they're sitting down. This is such a minor thing. They're sitting down and there's some like tension between the two of them. They're sitting on a couch. She's reading a book. He's, I don't know, you know, flicking through the TV or whatever happens. And they have... What book was she reading? Did you see which book she was reading?
I couldn't see. It had some large letters on it.
I think it was The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And Henrietta Lacks is the woman who had a tumour... Part of her tumor was taken out, and the tumor kept on multiplying and growing.
Oh yeah, and
so
then this word that
it was used in research.
Yes,
and now she is the biggest human in the world, because her mutated cancery cells keep being used.
Yes,
so there's literally like hundreds and hundreds of tons of her DNA and tumor DNA and matter has been used in research, but nobody, no human is hundreds of tons, well, however many tons it is and stuff like that. So that she was sitting there and she was a biologist reading pretty much a popular culture book about biology. You're like, nah, she's a biologist. She wouldn't be reading that book at that part of her life. You know, because she's a biologist who talks about cancer and stuff.
Yeah, like, tumors is her...
Yeah, she wouldn't be reading a popular science book about it. But it's an interesting book to put in there. And there are so many other things like that through the movie where you just go...
It's a little bit like when you have a painting.
Yeah.
And then you keep see looking all the little at, things. Yeah. And,
it's like, oh, somebody cares. It's like, it's so good to watch a movie where like the movie maker cares about everything. Now, of course, that, you know, what book someone is reading is always such an obvious sign. Like, you always look at the books that are on people's shelves or on people's cabinets or in their hands as they're reading, because they always tell you, because it's such an easy way just to give a little message. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I notice it and I'm like, oh, that's cool.
And I must say, though, we watch movies from the 80s and then we notice the length of a scene. Like, you have a scene and then it takes... whatever, almost 5 minutes for one scene, and you think like, in today's movies that's not made.
Yeah.
In that movie they did a few of those thought like, wow, there's a certain point when I start thinking about a scene and then I think like, now it is longer than you would normally do this scene.
But they kept going with it because they're like, no, we want you to...
Yeah, there were a few of those, this is why I'm saying
that. There's a funny quote on a podcast, on the Omnibus podcast, and John Roderick says, like, I've got a daughter and I decided to show her some Sesame Street. So I dug out some old episodes of Sesame Street from the 70s. And he says, the pacing of Sesame Street from the 70s is like watching The Deer Hunter, which is a notorious... What? Deer Hunter. It's like a notorious movie with like really long scenes, which just go on and on. And not like the pacing is really, really slow.
Yeah.
And modern Sesame Street is like snap, 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 you know, like that pacing thing. So it's one of those funny things. And yeah, this feels like a bit of a throwback movie because it's a science fiction with like old sensibilities, which makes you think
and this is why also I don't think this would be a box office thing, because this is like very cine, like this is a weird thing about this movie, it's such a weird mix of a wide audience movie and mixed in a cineastic and slasher.
Like horror bits, fantasy bits, weird bits. Yeah, it's such a mix.
And there is some very fast-paced action as well.
Yes, it's very tense and very interesting at places.
It's like some musicians, they say like, when you have like, oh, this is that genre, this is this genre, and then you say, they make music which is not to be put in a category, in a box. It's a
movie that's hard to categorize.
Yeah, totally.
But I think there's other movies which would be the same with that. Like, for example, 2001. Okay, it starts off with some monkeys in a desert, and then there's some kind of stuff around the thing, and they go to the moon, and then it cuts off, and then they go out to, you know, they go out to Jupiter, and then at the end it gets really... Like, it's not... There isn't even one story that's being told there. It's like four or five different chapters.
Movie as well.
Yeah, exactly. But what I'm saying is that this movie isn't broken up into chapters that way, but the tone shifts are similar.
Because of these changes, it kind of is put in chapters.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, yes, it kind of is. But I think there's not so many hard cuts about it. But like the bit about the only part of 2001 A Space Odyssey anybody ever references is the bit with Hal going out to Jupiter. Like there's a whole section before where they go to the moon. Nobody ever talks about that. Nobody ever talks. You know,
the
gorillas at the start. People mention that. And the Star Child at the end. Yeah, people mention that. But actually all the...
All the movies condensed to one scene.
Yeah, well, everyone who thinks about 2001 always just thinks, you know, open the pod, David, doors, I can't even say it, open the doors and the daisy, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's where the heart of the movie is that everybody still remembers, and that's what kind of makes it, like, even to this day, kind of a popular hit, even though it's always longer than people expect. Every time I've seen it, it's always like, wow, this scene really does go on a bit too long, doesn't it? Yeah. But yeah, like I say, that's where it is. But with this movie, this Annihilation, there isn't like one heart of this movie which everyone will remember. No. I think people will take different parts
of it. I think that was a little bit different to the book. I think the pacing in this, when they were like, it's like really at the beginning, especially if you compare it to the book, there are lots of stuff from the book is put into the beginning, really crammed, like, here's all the info.
Well,
like the rabbits.
Yeah.
They're just like... I remember in the book, the rabbits play...
Actually, that's more... I think that's more in the second and third book. That's not so much in the first book. Because I read the first book and I don't remember the rabbits too much. Mentioned too much.
Yeah, maybe.
But, yeah, like, in the book, all of the story with her husband and all, you know, what happened to him going in and coming out, that's all kind of set up in the first... Like, that's spread all the way throughout the book, let me put that. That's a massive part of the book, is her reflecting back on her past with her husband. In the movie, it's a little bit, but a lot of it is concentrated into this, like, first 5-6 minutes of this movie, and I'm like, oh, that was like a massive part of the book, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, when they get into the jungle, they can't always be doing that many levels of flashbacks. Of course, the movie does have like 3 different levels of flashback.
Yes.
Anyway, I said I could talk about it for another 3 hours, and we did just talk about it for another 9.5 minutes.
Yes.
So we actually should stop this.
Yeah, that's good.
Anything else? Yeah, email me. I'm at Luke Burridge. No, that's the wrong one. I'm luke@juggler.net, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge, and Instagram, I'm at Luke Burridge, and on YouTube, /Luke Burridge, and on everywhere. I'm Luke Burridge everywhere. And Juliana is on Twitter too. You can drop by her.
I'm not a good Twitter
J-U-K-U Berlin, but you can still follow her there. Best thing to do, though, is to become our friends on Goodreads so we can see what you thought about the book Annihilation. Let's check it out.
You don't have Goodreads open because it is. We talked about it.
No. It was here. I was right here on this page. So where is it? 200 Annihilation. So I can just click on
G
for Goodreads. Go across to sfbrp.com and look at the episode list. So I can actually see what other people think. Jenny. I love the good infuriation feeling, although it won't be over by the end of book 2. I'm saving book 3 for my trip to Florida anyway. So, actually, look, that was just a response to my review. Let's actually look what other people think of the book. You see, this is really great. And if you become my friend, I can just quickly look and see what you thought of the book as well. Except it's not loading. It's not loading. Oh, no, the reviews aren't loading. What's happening?
Weird.
Okay, well, I guess I can't share with people's. So I guess that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.